live at AsylumFantasyFootball.com. It's the Tuesday Night Blitz.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Asylum. We're Fligger and Briggs. Drop us a line at AsylumFootball@gmail.com.
On Twitter, at AsylumFootball.
Yes, indeed. And don't forget, WSRU 88.1 FM, the voice of the rock.
And we're here, Rick, asking the question, if a radio station goes on over the air and no one's there to hear it, did it really go on over the air?
Yes. Yes, it's just like a tree falling in the woods. It makes sound waves, whether or not anybody picks it up or not.
So you are unequivocally declaring that the tree does, in fact, make a noise.
It makes sound waves.
Not the same. You can't change the same.
Pure science.
So don't give me your nerdy science stuff. I'm talking real life. Nobody's there to hear it. It didn't make a sound.
Well, we've got
You can't prove it.
Yeah, you can't prove it either.
I can't. I didn't hear the damn thing. It didn't make
a sound.
Because
you weren't in the woods.
Precisely.
There you go.
Precisely. You just made my argument.
Yeah. No, you just made mine.
All right. What are we doing today?
We got a lot going on tonight. Well, let's see. First and foremost, we have a special guest coming on in just a few minutes, Mr. Steve Gallo. You know him on Twitter as at Steve Gallo NFL. He is writer, analyst for USA Today, thehuddle.com.
A periodical of note.
And but I'll tell you what, let's hit on something, you know, real important before we get started with all our depravity and everything else. We got a good friend of ours on Twitter, Jim Day, you know, at Fantasy Taz.
Yes.
And we played several leagues with him, talked with him quite often. He's been a guest on the show. We've been on his, so forth and so on. Well, he passed along email to, you know, all many followers and in his Google circles and everything else. And one of our, you know, fantasy football in our world, however you want to put it, our fantasy footballers, know him on Twitter at @lad_Davies. His daughter, Maddie. Cutest little thing. Saw a picture of her. We'll give you the info to go to the Facebook page. You know, suffering from diabetes, very bad. And anyway, Jim thought it would be a good idea that, you know, start some leagues and, you know, some of the fantasy football and stuff, get in on it. And the proceeds, you know, from these fantasy football leagues go to getting Maddie a diabetic alert dog. I guess it's a dad is what they call it.
Really?
Yes. And, of course, I signed us up. I told you about that a day or so ago, and you thought it was a great idea. So what we're asking everybody to listen, just kind of pass along, what you need to do is go to facebook.com/DAD for Maddie, M-A-D-I. And they have a lot of information there, what you can do maybe to help her out and see if we can get a diabetic alert dog for her to make sure if anything happened, you know, the dog is right there and can warn people, and I'm sure that's how it works.
Yeah,
and,
fantastic.
And, you know, if you need any other information, I mean, obviously you probably are familiar with Jim. Go to @FantasyTaz on Twitter, and I'm sure he can point you in the right direction.
Absolutely. Great cause. Have it be some great leagues. I don't know if this is something they're opening up to everybody, but certainly worth looking into. But either way, go to facebook.com/DAD for Maddie, ending in an I, Rick. I have that correct,
yes.
Don't I? All right.
Yes.
Everybody do that.
And I'm sure they're taking any kind of, you know, contribution,
absolutely,
support, you know, whether it's a league or not. You don't want to commit to a league. I don't want to do it. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Get on there.
Throw a few shekels out there, please.
There you go. Drachmas or whatever they are.
Drachmas.
I don't know, yeah.
Fantastic. All right, well, Rick, speaking of Jim, let's jump right into the headlines. We got Steve coming on here shortly, I believe, probably at the half hour mark.
Oh, yeah, you speak of Jim Day. We are talking Gronkowski. Guaranteed.
They are basically brothers, fist pumping together in the club. They probably live in the same neighborhood. The love this man has for Rob Gronkowski. Well, on Monday, had his fourth surgery to that forearm with the infections and everything going on. Robert Kraft came out today, said he hopes to have him for a full season. I don't think if you thought you were going to have him for a full season, you say you hope. So here we go, Rick. It's the great debate, only this time it won't be, and maybe it turns into it, it won't be the great debate of drafting a tight end low first, early second round, but now clearly the best tight end in fantasy football, having this fourth surgery, having these question marks. Rick, what of Rob Gronkowski? What are you going to do?
Well, I've never been able to get Gronk because I'm not one of these kind of guys that will draft a tight end in the first or second round. Now, actually talking to Jim on Twitter a couple of days ago.
If you call that slap fight two had on Twitter talking to him. But
well,
yeah.
We consider it talking anyway. But he apparently got Gronk in one of his mock drafts or league drafts, I'm not sure which, in the fourth round, you know, which I equate
maybe
that draft value a round per surgery. So, I mean, I guess, guess that's fair.
All right. So one round. So the first one's free. That's still a first round pick.
Right.
You know, on down. I like that.
And, fourth, fifth round, I'm there. I mean, the guy's a touchdown machine. If he comes back.
Oh, in the fourth round. If he plays eight games, he'll pay off as a fourth round kind of guy, I have to think.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And Tom Brady has come out and said that he has never felt more confident in passing right now. And, you know, what is it? You know, posturing, I don't know that.
What else would he say? Well,
exactly.
I'd like to know what the question was. I did hear he said that. I didn't hear the question that was answered. What's he going to say? 2007, I felt a little better, but I might now. I'll be okay.
My shoulder's a little sore, but we're all right.
Yeah, so I don't know. Kind of a silly thing. I wouldn't put too much stock into that. So, Rob Gronkowski, Rick, I agree. If we get to August and he's still floating around in the fourth round, I give it a thought, but I worry about it. And he's shown a tendency to come back too quick with this like he did at the end of last season. I worry less about the injury than with these infection issues he keeps having. I think we talked about it before. I worry there may be a little more to that story.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, contracting staph infections and so forth, the hospital isn't anything new in recent years,
no,
that's for sure. But, you know, one thing about Gronk, you talk about him coming back early. Hernandez is probably going to be healthy coming into this year. They're not going to have to rush him
in
there.
That's true. But what does that do to his value then? Maybe even
fourth
round, what's that do to his value? You know who I hate, Rick?
A lot of people.
People who ride bikes. I'm coming. I'm driving here. More happens.
Oh, wait. Say it again.
People who ride bikes.
Gee, Rick, why do you hate people who ride bikes?
I'm just telling you. I have more terrible things happen to me on my drive up here. I think we need to move the bunker elsewhere, off-site somewhere, having to come up here to the metropolis that is Grove City, Pennsylvania. However, there's this dinkus, and they're everywhere. It's not just here. And he's out, and he's riding his bike right in the middle of the lane. He's got his stupid helmet on.
Oh, yeah, trying to look like Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, it wasn't one of the pointy ones, thank God, or I would have hit him with my car. However, he's got his little fanny pack turned backwards. He's got a light blinking on the back. They just everything you imagine a biking kind of douche would have going on. I know what the law says. I generally like to consider myself a law-abiding citizen. However, you don't have the same rights as a vehicle to be in the middle of the lane going 7 miles an hour with your thumb in your nose. I'm sorry. I won't have it. This ass wouldn't pull over. I'm right on his back tire. I could have killed him at a moment's notice had I so chosen. Choosing, I don't think, is a word. Choosing. Had I so chosen.
He was choosing some jerky.
Refused to acknowledge me. He stopped at the stop sign, which I guess is rare for a jerk on a bike. However, he stopped at the stop sign, and at that point, that's where you let me go, right? Nope. Next block, right behind this guy. No room to get around him. So I guess
maybe he was stopping for the guy backing into the driveway that irritated you last week.
There was one of those, Rick. I wasn't going to bring it up again. There was only one this time, not the three like last week. But if you're into a bike, first of all, I don't know what I think of you, but get it off the road. There's trails everywhere. They take it through a field or at least on the berm. Get the hell out of my way if you're on a bike. Now, I don't know what that has to do with anything. I hate driving up here, Rick, is what it boils down to. I might start doing the show remotely. But back to football, Rick. I saw a little story. Marshawn Lynch,
remotely do the show as it is.
Well, that's an excellent point. Marshawn Lynch, a no-show at Seattle's OTAs today, the only healthy no-show. Kind of weird. No real story as to why. They don't say why. Does that concern you at all? I know we both, but you especially, how you're feeling about Marshawn Lynch this year.
No, it doesn't concern me. I mean, there's been many people not show up to OTAs, and let's face it, Pete Carroll's and the Seattle Seahawks had a bit busy offseason here recently.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
you know, why bring Marshawn Lynch in with all these criminals? Let's get, you know.
Well, speaking of criminals, my theory on why he's not there is Marshawn Lynch has his DUI trial on June 21st, perhaps something he's getting ready for. Something we haven't talked about, Rick, is we've been valuing Marshawn Lynch right there in the top five or six of running backs this season. You haven't heard much about it. Could there be a suspension pending? We talked about it a lot in the last offseason, and everything was put on hold with that trial being pushed back that far. It is going to happen now. It's scheduled for June 21st. You figure if he's convicted, you're probably going to see a little bit of a suspension at the beginning of the year.
It's very possible.
Because it's not his first brush with the law.
No.
He seems to have gotten it together, but he was a knucklehead in Buffalo.
Yeah. However, it goes back to the old cliche, that is definitely something you need to monitor because you can't sit and predict anything about that.
So, Arlie, you shouldn't be drafting for any league. You're actually going to play out probably at this point of the year. I would hope not here in May. But something to keep an eye on, and it will hurt his value. If he's a mid-first-round guy and he's facing a four-game suspension, Rick, as good as he's going to be in those other 12 games, he's not a first-round guy anymore. And then you start to have the debate, where do you take a guy that you know you're going to get great production out of those last 12 games, but you're missing him for those first four?
Yeah, but he could be one of those value picks, especially if you happen to be down around, 11 or 12 in your draft.
Still a first rounder? You're willing to eat four games? I may be.
But the
thing
is, you don't have to.
Right.
Because you have a next pick, and, so he could be right there at the very top of the second round.
True.
And you weather a storm through a couple of three games, whatever
try
it may
to
be.
Try to split, go 2-2,
and then
you're ready to roll. Good possibility, no doubt about it. So, Rick, another story I saw out there I found interesting. It's football-related, but not really fantasy football-related. Did you see all this business with RG3 with Robert Griffin and his wedding registry?
Yeah, I did see a little bit about that. It didn't really interest me a whole lot.
How can this not interest you? Here's what I want to know.
I'm worried about his knee. Yeah. I'm not worried about his wedding.
Nah, I'm worried about this registry thing. Number one, why is an NFL player registered at Bed Bath & Beyond? That seems a little low rent for a millionaire. However, as a man of means as yourself, I want to ask the question. If you don't know the story, RG3, he didn't do it himself. For some reason, the Washington Post posted a link to his gift registry at Bed Bath & Beyond, and all these fans went on and bought everything on the thing, everything on the registry fans bought for him. He tweeted out a picture of himself in a room just surrounded, stacked to the ceiling, boxes of these gifts he received from fans. Well, of course, other people just went nuts that being a man of means, him and you together.
Yeah, and Arnold Palmer.
And Arnold Palmer shouldn't be accepting these gifts and should have to send them back. And I think the resolution has been he's now going to send them back. He actually...
Why doesn't he just send them to victims in Oklahoma after these tornadoes?
What do they need with napkin rings? Come on, and scented
candles.
Well,
sooner or later, they're going to have to bathe, and I'm in a Bed Bath & Beyond, I'm sure.
They don't sell baths. That's the ironic part. However, it's more scented candles and all that awful thing. But so Robert Griffin tweets out, because you're rich, you shouldn't receive gifts, and hate is going to hate. So as a man of means, Rick, what is your stance on a millionaire receiving gifts from total strangers?
I don't believe there's anything. I mean, he didn't send them.
That's my point.
It's
yeah.
free will. They sent him freely and wanted to be his bud.
Yeah.
And why not?
Why should he have to send them back or donate them to charity? That was
exactly.
part of his tweet. And I think maybe that raised the ire. He felt he didn't have to donate that stuff to charity.
I mean, I will say, how many napkin rings do you need? You may want to get rid of a few.
How many napkins do you have? I don't know.
I don't know. How many place settings you're going to have?
You're the millionaire.
Well, they're going to have a lot of friends coming over, I'm sure.
That's true. Now you've got all these new buddies. So I just wanted to get it from a rich man's perspective.
Yeah, you blow more money than I ever see in a week.
I don't know if that's true. So, Rick, let's move on. Do we have any football news? You got to have something, Rick.
I believe we were talking about RG3. I mean, what more do you want? A wedding registry?
Yeah, that's true.
Or a star.
We should probably end the show right here. So while we wait for Steve to come on, there was another story I found interesting, Rick. Has nothing to do with football. Did you know the plague is coming? The cicadas are back here on the East Coast, Rick.
Oh, yeah. I remember the cicadas when I was down in Virginia the last time. I actually have around the house somewhere. I'm going to see if I can dig it up. I'll play it for you. I actually have a video. That's when I was running golf courses. And I was out on the backside somewhere. It was kind of wood-lined. and I was talking to a guy, and the guy was screaming. And mm-hmm. I had a video camera up, and you could hardly hear him. It was so loud. It was incredible.
You don't know why the cicadas. Every 17 years they come back. You don't know why they do.
To reproduce, I'm sure.
Yeah,
they're all over again.
They're all excited. They get steamed up, and it's time to come
you
back
betcha.
Out. But they say this year's group of them, I just found this interesting, at times, at its peak, in the right place, in the right conditions, up to 94 decibels, basically that of a large lawnmower, is the amount of noise these things are going to be making.
I believe it.
I am not looking forward to this whatsoever.
But birds and small animals, they love it because there's protein running around for about 2 or 3 weeks.
True. Might be a good year for turkey hunting in the fall,
there
I
you
suppose,
go.
If they can get up there and get them. Well, Rick, we have been saved by the bell. It looks like our guest is ready to join us.
All right. Hello, Steve.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, we are just doing wonderful. And for everybody, this is Steve Gallo, NFL analyst, IDP writer for USA Today, thehuddle.com. Steve, how is everything?
Everything is well, and I think I'm going to fit in a little better than what you gentlemen realize because I, too, despise those bicyclists. where I live, there's a major route. It's a highway, and they all want to ride on that highway. There's about 6 inches of shoulder, and about 20 feet across the median that's on the side is a brand new paved bike path that they just refuse to ride on.
Oh, you're what, Williamsburg?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I used to live in Richmond. I know exactly what you're talking about. You just want to run them off the road.
I think then you would be fully within your rights to drive your car on the bike path then, would you not?
Oh, but there is a sign that says no motorized vehicles on the bike path. Go figure.
That's where they get you.
Hey, Steve, before we get started, I want to ask you a question. Since you're down in Williamsburg, I know it's closed, but did you ever go to an establishment called Rosie Rump's Regal Dump?
No, I have not. However, it was, I believe, open just when I moved here about 10 years ago.
Right.
But no, I never was able to frequent that establishment.
Rick, you need to explain.
It was.
I asked you before the show if this was a strip club, and you said no.
No. It was a restaurant that was the theme of, like, King Arthur stuff. Kings and queens and goblets and stuff. Knaves and what do they call wenches?
What's a knave?
I don't know. You have servants and stuff like that. And they would, they just beller. And they would serve stuff in wooden bowls and everything. And they would take somebody out of the lot and give them a look like the Ark of the Covenant was full of salt. And they would make that person the keeper of salt. And if you wanted salt for your food, you had to go to the guy, get down on your knees, and ask for salt, and he put it in your hand. And you take it back. I mean, that's serious.
How do you not punch the
salt
guy in
the
face?
They went through, like, a big comedy routine. I mean, it was like an action truth and everything. So anyway.
I can't believe you've done it.
Let's get into football. So, Steve, as a writer for USA, primarily on IDP, I've been talking a lot about is coming off his injury, how concerned do you see his body? Where do you see him going this season?
Well, I'm having a little bit of technical difficulties on this end, but I could tell that you were asking me about Jones-Drew. And I'm not somebody that's been exactly high on him the past few years. And I know he's coming off injury last year, but right now he's got an ADP at MFL of around running back 14, which puts him around an early third-round pick. And at that point, I actually think he's presenting some value. Whereas in past years, he's been going much earlier than what I would like to have seen him. Last year, even with the 0.6 that he had in the game that he got injured, he wound up ranking 21st in PPR at 12.67 points per game. Through 5 weeks last year before that injury, he was running back 13. So if you can get him in the early third round, mid to late third round, and he's your running back 3, if you went running back, and you want to dive into the position for a third, then I do think he presents some value. And even if you want to grab one of those top-end wide receivers, if you're in the first three picks and you're coming back on the snake round, you want to go wide receiver running back, he makes for a nice solid pick there, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Rick has always been down on him quite a bit. I've been a little bit better, you know, I guess more charitable to him than he has. He stays away from like the plague. I mean, he's paid dividends for me, you know, in years past and burnt me as well. But yeah, I agree. I mean, right now, especially coming off an injury like that, it's so unpredictable. I'm kind of cautious about him as well.
So here's what I feel about Maurice Jones-Drew when healthy. And the numbers, I think, will be out. And if you listen to most of these shows, know my opinion. However, I see that at the end of the year, you see he'll be a top back, I believe, once the number one overall back. Oh, he's about 6 or 7 games. And when I'm playing fantasy football, that's not the kind of guy I trust.
Well, I told you guys I had a little bit of a teaser with some stats for a running back for you, and I'm going to run out some yards per carry for Jones-Drew. 4.18, 4.46, 4.42, 4.68, and 4.81. Now, if I told you that those were his yard per carries over the last 5 years, and I told you to guess which one was last year, you probably would guess 4.18 because we usually see running backs start to decline as they age. But Jones-Drew has defied that logic somewhat, and he has actually increased his yards per carry from 2008 when it was 4.18 all the way up to 4.81 last year. Granted, it was on limited work due to the injury, but still it shows that maybe he's not slowing down, and he is only going to be 28 this season, so he's still got some tread left on those tires. And I think that we'll see him continue to put up solid numbers. And at this point, what makes him great and pretty intriguing to me is the fact that he is a value compared to where he's been in years past.
Yeah, that's true. And he is one of those kind of guys similar to like an Ahmad Bradshaw. They seem like they've been around forever, but they're, you know, in their 20s and really hitting their prime. But, you know, I guess you just have to get him in the right spot, like you say. And there's going to be a lot of leagues, I'm sure, if you're waiting for him in the third. Somebody's going to grab him thinking he's going to come back like he was 2 years before when he won the rushing title. But, no, I mean, you know, that was part of the question. I mean, he's just got that reputation for hard work and conditioning. And, you know, I think he can come back pretty strong.
I'll tell you who may not be so excited to have Jones-Drew back. Could be Blaine Gabbert if he wins that job. Believe it or not, last year with 4 games when he had Jones-Drew in the lineup, he only had a 54.8% completion percentage and a passer rating of 73.31. In the 4 games post-bye that were basically all without Jones-Drew with the exception of 2 carries, 62.1 completion percentage, and he had a passer rating of 81.81.
Now that's interesting. What would you attribute that to? Just workload, game plan? That's an interesting stat. And you see little things like that across the league. Is it just the game plan when Jones-Drew is in there versus when he's not?
You know, that's something that I dug up last night when I was doing some research for the show. So I actually want to dig a little deeper into that. If I had to give you, you know, a gut guess as to what it is maybe it was Gabbert knowing that he did not have to rely on Jones-Drew. And maybe that added pressure of knowing it's on my shoulders was actually something that had him step up and perform a little bit better.
Now, that's something going in as a fantasy owner, you know, with the emergence of Cecil Shorts and, of course, you know, who knows what Blackman's going to do now. We thought he was coming on, and yet he gets in trouble again. But, you know, they actually moved the ball a little bit through the air. I mean, they could actually have maybe a fairly balanced attack this year,
at least a reasonable NFL offense.
I've got some. I agree. I think that the Jacksonville team could be in for an upgrade, you know, on the offensive side of the ball. But then again, how couldn't they be? But I do have some numbers for you guys, too, if you're interested on Blackman and Shorts. Last year, when they closed out the season, weeks 11 through 16, Blackman had 60 targets for 104.8 fantasy points. That's a 1.74 fantasy points per target. Shorts had 47 targets and only 85.8 points, but he had an average of 1.83 fantasy points per target. That was without Gabbert. With Gabbert, Blackman had 59 targets, 59 points, and a 1.0 fantasy points per target, while Shorts had 58 targets, just one shy, had 108.7 fantasy points and 1.87 fantasy points per target. So I'd say that the big winner here, if Gabbert can win that starting quarterback job, is going to be Cecil Shorts.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That was going to be my follow-up question. You know, how, and we're not going to know till we get to camp. I got to think they're going to give Gabbert every chance to win that job. But I got to tell you, at the end of the year, it seemed to move. Things seemed to move better outside, it, generally in offense, when, with Henny at quarterback. I'm curious to see how that shakes out. And that's an interesting stat. And also, we have to deal with now the latest Justin Blackmon incident. Got to assume there may be a suspension forthcoming. It's a shame to see, because I really think that could be a legitimate star.
Yeah, he can. He's got to get his head on straight, because he does have some legitimate NFL talent. And the other thing to remember is I'm actually not in the group that's going to say that Gabbert has to win this job. Granted, there's going to be a competition, but I think it's his to lose. This regime is brand new, from the GM to the head coach. They really have nothing to lose by having Gabbert under center all year, see what they have. And if it's nothing, then they get a reboot. It's not going to work against them in the eyes of ownership, and then they'll draft the quarterback, or they'll move on next year if he's not the answer.
Yeah, that's true. Move on. I had a question just to get your opinion, because Rick and I talk about this a lot. I'm always moving running backs around. And, yeah, right now I've got Jamal Charles ranked number one. I got Peterson two and Foster three. Charles is probably going to fall a little bit again, because that's just the way I wishy-wash around. He doesn't score the touchdowns like Peterson and Foster. But I'm really – I don't know. I'm just high on them this year. I like the move, getting Alex Smith. Dwayne Bowe seems to be in a good mood. I think they're going to be a lot better situation. Just curious. See, like, the top three to five running back going into 2013 right now.
Well, I'm going to say that back on March 4th, I actually penned an article on my blog, fullimpactfootball.com, and it was titled Alex Smith to the Chiefs, Some Stats to Chew On. And what I pointed out was just how beneficial this is going to be, not just for Alex Smith, but also Jamal Charles. And at that time, I said that, believe it or not, I have Charles in my top three, and I'm very close to moving him to number one at running back. So I don't think it's a stretch to have him that high, especially I know people look at Andy Reid's offense and they believe that it's a pass, pass, pass first offense, which it is. But one of the things that they do a lot in Andy's offense is they do throw the ball to running backs. Last year they completed, with Andy Reid, in the last 4 years, quarterbacks completed 22.8% of their passes to running backs, which is an average of 78.5 per season. From 01 to 04, when those Eagles were dominating and going to the conference championship for four straight years, it was 31.67%. And they averaged 97.5 per season to running backs. So you take that, you look at what Charles can do, and if he even handles the ball between 250 to 275 times from a rushing standpoint, which isn't that far-fetched, and then you add in the 70 catches that I'm projecting for him, you're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 286 to 305 points. That puts him right there. So I see a lot of upside, very little downside with Charles this year. Adrian Peterson is just a medical marvel. How you can't have him in your top three, I don't know. But it seems like that top five to seven, eight running backs is really jumbled up depending on what type of draft you're in based on scoring or the people that you're with, because it really has seen turnover from two through eight in just about every draft that I've seen outside of Peterson being number one, but he wouldn't be number one for me.
Yeah, I agree. I actually rarely agree with Rick, but do right now have Jamar Charles at 1, AP 2. The one I do find interesting is the other one Rick mentioned was Arian Foster. No real reason statistically I could come up with. I tried to find something. I guess just call it gut feeling. I worry about him having a lot of health issues, although when the year's done, it seems he carries any plays into the game. I worry about a regular heart rick or a heart something he had to do. Just a guy, obviously still a top five, top six guy. I just if I see him at that number three, there's some guys out there I like a little better.
And one of those guys I like a lot better is Trent Richardson. If you look at what he did last year, he finished, just outside of the top five in most leagues. And he basically played last year wounded. He's healthy. Cleveland offense has improved. The defense has improved. They were not an easy out last year, like the record may have shown. I expect Richardson to really make a thrust forward, not just somebody that you should have your eye on if you're in a dynasty league, but this year I would not be shocked whatsoever he breaks that top five.
Yeah, no question about it. He's a rare species in the NFL now, a true feature back. There isn't anybody behind him taking third down and taking goal line carries. he's getting all that work. A guy who may be in that situation that I've seen in some places sneaking into that top five, certainly that top eight you discussed, is C.J. Spiller. I'm interested in him. Fred Jackson, presumably healthy and going to be back. Fred Jackson, for all we've talked about C.J. Spiller over the years, Fred Jackson still seems to get the bulk of that work, although when he was out, you saw what C.J. Spiller is capable of. I just wonder, assuming a healthy and ready-to-play Fred Jackson, do you see a guy like C.J. Spiller sneaking up into that top five or six running back?
You know, you can't really win your league or lose your league in your first round, but you can put yourself at a serious disadvantage. And as electric as Spiller is, the one thing that gives me pause is his penchant for injury, and that's based on the size and the way he plays the game. Yes, I could see him finishing as a top three running back this year, but everything has to break right. And one of the things that I see that he has going against him is the Buffalo regime's turning that offense over. It looks like E.J. Manuel's going to be their starting quarterback, which adds an air of unknown to it. And I don't like that type of pick with my first rounder, especially if you've got to use something in the top 10. So while I do expect that he could land there, the risk doesn't outweigh the reward for me.
I agree. I'm not as high, even though I do like him. Don't get me wrong. I'm not quite as high as Rick is. He's more of a gamble if you're going after him as an RB1. You know, we just mentioned guys that I would certainly take ahead of him. You know, Richardson, of course, the Charles and Fosters. And, yeah, I'm a little worried about the penchant to injury, as you mentioned. Another guy I wanted to just since we're talking running backs here, this guy, you know, second only behind Eric Dickerson and George Rogers as far as rookie campaigns, Alfred Morris. How do you like, does he go more on the Dickerson pass or does he more go on the George Rogers path of career?
Well, I have to say one thing. Do you know who his coach is?
That's We've talked about that many times. It scares me to death.
That's your answer. You have to be able to weigh what you're willing to deal with from Shanahan. While he was a golden child last year, you know, put a couple on the turf, and that could change real quick with a guy like Shanahan. So if you're going to go after Alfred Morris and spend a running back one type pick on him, even running back two, which that's where he's at, so that's you're going to have to deal with that. For me, I don't like that kind of headache. I'll give up on that production because his upside is limited by not being involved in the passing game, and I'll probably go for a guy even like a Giovanni Bernard in Cincinnati, who I know hasn't locked anything down yet. But even with some modest numbers, as long as he's involved in the passing game, will give solid running back two numbers more than likely for fantasy owners.
Yeah, no question about it. My biggest fear with Morris and the Shanahan situation is even coming off of that fantastic season he had last year, there could be the next undrafted guy in the Skins camp that we don't know about quite yet who catches Shanahan's eye and ends up getting the bulk of those carries. You mentioned Giovanni Bernard before we get off the running back, and I definitely want to get into some IDP stuff because, admittedly, this is something that Rick and I haven't done a whole lot of and want to get that out there on this show. But with the running backs, you mentioned Bernard. With the rookie running back, I see a lot of potential fantasy value and a lot of potential stars with the running backs drafted this year. Who do you think is emerging? Maybe I don't want to go as far as Adrian Peterson.
Hello, I think I may have lost you guys.
Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us? Hello, Steve.
All right, Rick, I think we lost Steve, so we'll go ahead and hope he calls back in, and we'll jump right into the IDP stuff. But, you know, talking about the rookies, I think we spent a lot of time on that. I was interested that he brought up Giovanni Bernard first. You still have your boy Law Firm in town, who I know you're a big fan. I mean, truthfully, I was too, no question about it, going into last year. And he was serviceable, a good low end too, a great number three.
Oh, yeah.
We were higher on him than most people. You know, I just wonder what the split's going to be like there.
Yeah, I don't know that either. I did like Law Firm, especially where you could get him in the draft. I thought he was great value.
He was maybe, a 6th, 7th round guy?
Yeah, but, you know, like a Bernard coming in, I got a feeling he's probably going to go a little earlier than probably what I'm going to. Whether now, if it turns out that he takes a job kind of like a Doug Martin situation, you know, bravo, you made a good pick. Goes back to, you know, running back by committee.
Yeah.
And then Jarvis Green Ellis gets a good load workload.
Even 30-40% of the carries you have to worry about.
It's not good. Is
all
he
right.
back on?
Looks like we have Steve back on the line. Let's give it a shot here. Steve, you back out there?
I'm back. I have no idea what happened. Sorry about that, guys.
Oh, no problem. It happens. So, hey, let's jump right into IDP. I know you write for IDP. Admittedly, something that Rick and I haven't done a lot of, done a few drafts this year. I think first and foremost, where I struggle the most, obviously, and I see it in IDP league, I'm targeting my running back, really my skill position. Where do I start targeting my individual defensive players in my draft?
Well, this is going to sound like a cop-out, but the word of the day with regards to this is depends. And the reason for that is, like I said, it seems like a cop-out, but it is the right answer because drafts are so fluid. It depends on what your background is. You'll hear people say, don't reach for the name guys like J.J. Watt, Patrick Willis's, et cetera. But you know what? If you're somebody that's not that in tune with what's going on and you've done a little bit of research and you have to make that launch a little earlier than you would if you were a seasoned guy that's been doing it, and you know that you can mine some guys later, then that's what you do. So that's why I say it depends. But if I can make one thing that I would say is that if you're going to reach first, reach for that defensive end because the supply and demand just is not there to get that difference maker. But again, everything, just like on the offensive side of the ball, depends on the scoring system.
Yeah, that's a good point. I take it you know, J.J. Watt is a clear defensive end to target number one. But, you know, we're talking about different positions. And like you said, you know, like a goalie and a quarterback, like, you know, if you're doing fantasy hockey, fantasy football, of course, you have the one out there. In IDP and football, you basically have, you know, multiple of different positions. But, is there one or more find where you can get away with, you know, less, I guess I should say, you know, like linebackers, should you stock up on linebackers, should you stock up on ends, or which one you get away with not stocking up on?
And the one you get away with not stocking up on is defensive backs. Last year, Charles Tillman led all defensive backs with 15.3 points per game. The number 10 DB was Rashad Jones in Miami at 12.93. That's a difference of 2.4 points per game, right? Then, within the top 40 of defensive backs, scored 10.93 points or more. Okay? 50 of them scored in double digits. And if you back it all the way out to 112 total defensive backs, scored 8 points or more. It's just such a deep, deep position that you really can just let that position go and hit it later, hit it off the waiver wire. You'll always find something that you control and plug into your lineup. So for me, I'm usually going to hit defensive ends very hard. And then people like to, you know, hoard their linebackers. Linebackers are the equivalent of running backs, or the way running backs used to be looked at in fantasy. So yeah, you'd want to go ahead and make sure you get some solid tackling linebackers if you're on a tackle neutral or tackle heavy scoring. But for me, the money still, you're going to make your money and win when you can actually land top producing defensive ends.
Yeah, no question about it. And I noticed with the running back, what I found interesting in going through some IDP rankings, going back to your point on the secondary, it also seems, I guess, it's going to depend on your scoring format. What I found most surprising was the name guys, the guys you think of. Now, injury played a factor with a lot of these guys, but your Darrell Reeves, your Troy Polamalu, or sort of fallen by the wayside. So when you're looking at your stages, when you're looking at the corners, is this really something you just sort of play the matchups? Do you try to identify the right matchup each week, maybe the right quarterback, and don't really waste a lot of roster spots on these guys?
I don't waste a lot of roster spots. For the most part, I play in dynasty leagues outside of the annual expert leagues that I participate in. But for the most part, it's dynasty leagues. But even there, it doesn't matter. Your cornerbacks, your big-name guys are going to be avoided, Champ Bailey's, your Darrell Revis's, because quarterbacks don't want to throw at them. And if they're not throwing at them, then they don't have a chance to make a difference, you know, from the stats, in the stat box. So at cornerback, you want to try and target guys that actually aren't very good NFL players or that are playing opposite of a guy like Revis or Champ Bailey, because they're going to be the ones that are get thrown at, and then they get a chance to make tackles and stuff. As far as your defensive ends and your linebackers, The other thing to look at is defensive ends usually can take 2 to 3 years before they mature and actually can get into the speed of the game in the NFL, much like wide receivers used to need 2 or 3 years, that three-year wide receiver breakout that we used to look for. You get that with defensive ends now. Linebackers tend to make a more immediate impact, so they're easier to find in mind because, again, it's a position where it's seek and get the ball carrier. And you'll want to find guys and search out, you know, offenses that are going to struggle and keep their defense on the field a lot, like, say, the Oakland Raiders this year.
That is interesting. You know, we're trying to, you know, a lot of our listeners just don't do the IDP formats a lot because we do a lot of PPR standard, that kind of thing. You know, just expanding on, like, the little tutorial you're given, you know, we brought up J.J. Watt. You know, it's arguably the best defensive end, or maybe even the best defensive player in the NFL. But is he the best IDP player?
Actually, yes, I think he is. While he doesn't score as many points per se in most scoring formats as the top linebackers will. And as an example, Ray Lewis led linebackers last year with 18.5 points per game. Now, granted, he did not play the whole season. So number two would have been James Laurinaitis, who came in with 17.93 points per game. You go all the way down to number 10 at linebacker was Levante David, the rookie for the Buccaneers, and he averaged 16.7 points per game. Watt only averaged 15.63. Calais Campbell was second at 11.13, and then Greg Hardy at 10.07. Those are the only three defensive ends to average above double digits last year. So that 15.63, while it's not to the level of your top-end linebackers, when it's compared to the rest of the position, the value is much more dramatic, and that's why he makes such a big difference, and he'd be number one on my board among all IDPs.
So in looking at IDP and doing the draft, and with the knowledge now that it's going to depend on how your draft goes, I'm going to admit when I'm drafting in an IDP league, we tend to do more in the redraft. Again, really, honestly, this year just starting to jump into the dynasty a little bit. I tend to just old stuck in my ways the way I've been drafting for a long time. I'm filling up that offensive roster. I'm waiting probably too late. What factors do you use to identify a sleeper kind of guy in an IDP? And maybe who are a few of those guys I can target at any point, really, when I wait too late in your J.J. Watts and some of these offensive
guys? I think the one thing that you want to do is you want to look. I mean, we can create so many different advanced metrics now, especially last year the NFL started publishing snaps played for players. And I actually last year said that Patrick Willis was not going to be a top 10 linebacker. And that was based on some stats that I grabbed from Pro Football Focus and then looked at him and saw that he actually was starting to trend downwards with his production per snap played. So that's one of the things that I would keep on is looking at, you know, are there people that were in limited duty that are looking at increased roles that perform better than expected, but not based on what they actually put up fantasy point-wise, but the production per snap played. So that's a metric that I look at as something that's just becoming bigger tool for us now based on the fact that the NFL is going to start publishing these snaps played per game like they did last year, which was just – that's a boon for us in the fantasy world. I really do think so. Then the other thing that I'm going to look at is – yeah, I'm going to look at the offense in general. And as an example, the Bills and the Raiders, they both look like they're going to struggle on offense this year. So that means that defense is going to be on the field in excess of 1,000 snaps this year. The more that you're on the field, the better chance you have at making plays. So they're the kind of teams that I'm going to look at if I'm really trying to mine somebody that you may not have an eye on, a Steve Moore. And if he's on the field as a starter this year, he could be a sneaky top 24 type linebacker because of the opportunity that he'll face, not necessarily because of the talent that he presents. So I'm one of those guys that I don't look at the overall talent of a player as much as situation. There are debates back and forth on that, but I've been pretty successful with it. And I think that you have to have an opportunity no matter how good you are if you want to put points up in fantasy.
Yeah, that's interesting. That kind of brings up another subject, rookies. You know, all players are different. Just looking to see how you approach rookies, or do you approach them with caution? Do you not? I know, you know, in the past I've been burned a few times just because, yeah, maybe it's old school or whatever, because of the rookie thing. But, you know, I really wasn't buying into Cam Newton as a rookie and sort of got burned that way. But, you know, in those situations, I just find it easier to take a veteran I know what I'm getting, and it's less mystery. I mean, how do you approach rookies in IDP? And I know because defense is a little different, but they are translating into a more complicated system.
Yeah, it's not that much different from the offensive side of the ball. I'm pretty cautious when it comes to rookies. I think that people tend to overvalue them, especially in dynasty leagues. I was not enamored with this year's class whatsoever, offense or defense, outside of Arthur Brown, who I think is going to make an instant impact for the Ravens and for fantasy owners. But if you're looking for instant impact from an IDP, linebacker is the position you're going to have to look at. But you really need to look at the scheme that they're going to be playing, because if they're playing a rush outside linebacker position where they're going to be rushing the quarterback a lot and your league scoring system values tackles more than sacks, then that's going to discredit that person and push them down where they should be ranked. Players like DeMarcus Ware aren't going to rank as highly in scoring systems where you've got tackles that are, you know, valued more than sacks. And if it's a sack-heavy league, then guys like Ware and Von Miller, of course, are going to have added value as linebackers. So you have to understand your scoring system. But linebackers genuinely can be the positions that have immediate impact. Then the same goes with cornerbacks, because they're going to get picked on. If a cornerback is starting, you go by what's called the rookie corner rule, until they show that they're going to hold their own. Quarterbacks, I don't care if it's Sam Bradford or Blaine Gabbert versus Aaron Rodgers, they're going to test that weak link till they prove that they're not a weak link. So you can get a year or two of good production out of even guys that are going to wind up being shutdown corners until they prove that. And then at defensive end, it's a rare guy that's going to come in year one and really make a difference. Even J.J. Watt didn't set the world on fire his first season. He was serviceable, but that's not the norm. Most of those guys are going to take a year or two to really get their feet under them before you can rely on them. But I'm the kind of guy that I don't like to rely on rookies as much. I'll go for that veteran. But again, it's one of the things I said on the radio show last year when I was on 6:20 a.m. down in Tampa every week, was that you really have to understand the chemistry of your team. And if you try to rely too much on all those boom or bust guys, more than likely you're going to struggle at times. And if you have all those stodgy, slow, and just serviceable veterans, then you're not going to have the upside that you need on your team. So it's, to me, it's an art form to draft and put together a good team, but you have to understand chemistry as it relates to when and who you're going to pick over a certain spot. You know, if I want an upside player at defensive end and I've already got a J.J. Watt and another solid player like Cam Wake from Miami, then, yeah, I might take a stab at somebody later that I think has a chance to make some noise. But I wouldn't take that guy, Deion Jordan, say, as my first defensive end and expect him to carry me to a promised land.
Yeah, no question about it. So in the couple minutes we have left, I want to swing back, move off of IDP a little bit. Just look at some draft trends out there and get your thoughts. And we've given ours and talked to a lot of folks over the last several weeks. One trend I'm noticing now these are early mock drafts. We're still sitting just in May. But looking at ADP rankings from my fantasy league right now, as we had last year and the year before, you were seeing those top three quarterbacks going in the first round or two in the first round, one early in the second. I'm seeing right now Aaron Rodgers averaging about 20th overall. We're seeing Drew Brees around 33rd. Tom Brady down around 50. Do you see this as a trend that's going to continue moving into next season when we get into our redrafts here come late August, early September? Or is this just sort of a mock draft experiment and loading up with these running backs? Do you see this trend continuing?
Well, I'm going to say that actually I think those guys still might be being taken a little bit too early. I can't really give much away, but I'm working on a very big piece with regards to quarterbacks and the value that they present for fantasy footballers. I looked at over 2,000 fantasy games and how the quarterback impacted those games. I'll give you a couple of nuggets. You'll be shocked to know that let me pull this up so I can quote an exact number for you here. You'll be shocked to know that in over 580 games that I looked at in SOFA Classic, which is an experts league for the Site Owners Fantasy Association is what it's called, I zeroed out the quarterback every team that won that entire season from 2006 through 2012. That's over 580 games. 63% of those teams still won with their quarterback points being zeroed out.
I did see a little bit of that you had put up, and that's extremely – that was shocking to me.
Now, that's zeroing out both quarterbacks?
I didn't see the results. I just saw, you know, that little teaser there. That is shocking.
Yeah, no, it's not zeroing both quarterbacks out. It's zeroing out just the quarterback from the team that won to see if they still would have won their matchup or not.
Wow, so, that's incredible.
Just in that one league, again, it's from 2006 through 2012, 581 fantasy games. It was actually 0.631, which equates in a 13-game season to 8.2 wins without a quarterback.
So I think the takeaway from that, and to your point, then really we shouldn't be valuing these quarterbacks even anywhere near these points. So is this when you're drafting, then are you just looking to identify high upside quarterback, late round kind of quarterbacks? Is that the way you tend to play then?
The quarterback position, I've got more research that I'm not going to give away at this point, because, like I said, this article I'm working on is pretty intense, and I think it's really going to turn a lot of what people do draft-wise on its ear. The difference in those 581 games, just to go back to that for a quick second, the point differential that those teams ended up averaging their loss by when I took the quarterback away in the 36.9% of the games that they lost was just 10.93 points. So that's another thing to let, you know, simmer and think about that for a second. So it's not like you're even getting blown out with those quarterback points missing when you do lose.
Yeah, that, you know, we've said over and over in our shows over the last couple of years, yeah, both of us are in the same sort of draft strategy when it comes to quarterbacks. We always tend to get them down 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th round, whatever, the best value there. And always seem to be okay. I've done a lot of mock drafts the last, two or three years, taking a Drew Brees in the first or something like that and experimenting. And seldom do I ever see the results as getting a Peyton Manning in the 7th or a Matt Ryan in the 8th or what have you. And, you know, that just really confirms, you know, I mean, that kind of research is really something, but that really confirms, you know, the success or failures that I've had over, you know, God, countless years.
Well, here, I'm going to, since you touched on ADP, and that's what the question initially was about, from 2006 through 2012 in that same SOFA league, the top three ADP quarterbacks, not who finished 1, 2, 3, but the top three drafted quarterbacks, number 1, 2, and 3, averaged over that time frame 6.24 wins per season based on a 13-game regular season. If you back out Brady's year that he hurt his knee and didn't give anything into that, it goes down to 6.2.
Incredible. So I think lesson learned as the drum we've been beating, Rick, and we definitely want to see that article when it comes out. Definitely safe to wait on your quarterback. So Steve, hey, we really appreciate your time. Why don't you take the last minute or two here and plug everything you're doing?
Well, I appreciate that. It was my pleasure to be on with you guys. You can read me at The Huddle, thehuddle.com. And then I've also got a blog, fullimpactfootball.com. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at Steve Gallo, NFL. And hopefully you guys have me back on sometime later, either this season or next season, and we can talk about that quarterback article when it hits.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to that, and we're certainly going to try to get you back on, you know, right around draft time, you know, like redraft and so forth, and we'll really get into some real meat and potatoes sort of debate when it comes to draft position and so forth. And, you know, I mean, we really appreciate you coming on. We've kind of just started chatting on Twitter over the last few months and whatever, and I'm really glad you took the time out to come on the show.
Sure, and you know what, if I have time, let me give one more thing a plug, and that's the Ultimate Drafter Series, which is a new concept league that I just created this year. You can find out about it by following me. I'll tweet it on Fridays so that you can see the link and how to get to it, what it entails. But just a quick synopsis of what that is. People so often will say, well, that guy won because he had the first overall pick, or he had the 12th pick and it was a real deep first round. He got the best two players. The Ultimate Drafter Series, you draft from each draft slot over the course of 12 drafts. It's a best ball format. All the points are totaled across for each one of your teams. And at the end of the day, we'll know who drafted the best from all 12 positions. And my goal is that hopefully over the next few years, by having this information and this data, that we can actually see where the sweet spot in drafts are and where the best value, if you can bid or pick a draft slot, so that you can make a better educated guess on where you need to be.
Awesome. Sounds fantastic. I know we've had that debate several times. Where do you want to be? I like that 12 spot. A lot of guys like the one. So we'll check that out. And so, hey, we'll get some links to that stuff up on our site. And definitely, Steve, let's get back together when that quarterback article comes out. I want to discuss that a little bit more in depth.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks again. Take care.
Appreciate it.
All right, Rick. Well, that was Steve Gallo, USA Today, thehuddle.com. What was the blog? I'm sorry. I'm blanking on that one.
Yeah, what was it, the Ultimate Draft? Was that
yeah,
what it was?
The yeah, the Ultimate Draft series. Check all that out. Actually, very interesting information to see that put together, Rick, with the quarterbacks. As you said, we have discussed that over and over again. But you want to talk about proof to throw the quarterback score completely out and still win 63% of your games. I can't wait to see that article.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's going to be right up our alley. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, no, it lends credence to something we just sort of threw out there with no information behind it whatsoever.
Well,
at least
I mean,
me.
Well, the information is just not, certainly not nearly as deep in that he's really researched. I mean, that's something that
yeah,
I really,
yeah,
that's great.
A lot of tremendous research there, so can't wait to see that. We'll definitely get Steve back on, Rick. So we got about two more minutes left of show, I suppose. Want to get back into Rob Gronkowski. So he has that injury deal. What, in your opinion, is something I was thinking about. What's that do for Jimmy Graham's value? Is Gronkowski, I guess what I'm asking, is Gronkowski still the number one tight end? Does Jimmy Graham jump above? Now, we're going to have to wait and see what happens with this surgery. Let's say they come out and say he's going to start in week one. Is Gronkowski still your number one tight end? Do you worry about Hernandez? I know you're not drafting either of them early in the second round where you're going to have to be to do it.
I think that depends on the individual fantasy player. If they come out and say, you know, Gronk starting number one, you're either a Gronk or a Graham guy. I mean, they're going to be one or two,
yeah,
let's face it. And it's just personal preference as far as I'm concerned. As far as, you know, enhancing Jimmy Graham's draft value, it doesn't really enhance it.
You're,
I mean,
still going to take
it
him
may
in the
hurt,
second round.
Yeah, it may hurt Gronk's, you know, if he's not playing, but Graham's is going to be one or two anyway.
Yeah, and one more thing I wanted to hit on the top and I forgot about, I had written down here. Draft moving to May next year. Do you care? This was like the biggest news since D-Day yesterday. Does anybody care? Does it matter?
No, really, it's still going to be the same result.
Yeah, it's going to move free agency around a little bit. I the only thing I wonder, you move it back, do you worry, do you have more guys not signed coming into camp maybe? Although you don't see movement, how many draft picks have you seen signed yet? Very few.
Oh, no, quite a few of them have signed.
Low draft picks, though. And these guys, the way things are slotted now, you know what I mean? I don't think it matters.
I think they'll be signed. I
something
think
that annoys
stupid
me.
Not to sign. Yeah. And the way the rookie contract situation is, hey, there's really not much to think about it is like it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not throwing the boatloads and boatloads of money at these
guys.
Yeah,
they can't throw that big money at the first few players there. Just something the draft nicks were just going wild about. It seemed mixed. Even the big draft nicks didn't care, and other people were just losing their minds that they would push it back. What I didn't like was the NFL coming out and saying that they did it so then they had something, some major news every month of the year. Are they that arrogant? Really, does it matter if there's a little lull in May?
No, not to me.
No, I don't
just
care.
Yeah, it's stupid.
But I don't want to alienate half our audience by talking down on the draft, which I tend to do a lot on this show. So let's get out of here while we still have one or two listeners
left.
No,
I mean, I like the draft, but it, you know, whether it's in late April or May, doesn't matter. I'll still watch it the same way I did it before.
They'll be there, and you still won't know who anybody is after the first round.
As long as Mel Kiper has his hair, we're all right.
At least one of you guys will.
That's right.
All right, let's get out of here. Thanks again to Steve Gallo, at Steve Gallo NFL on Twitter. Check him out there. We sure appreciate it. We're definitely going to get him back on. We'll be back next week on The Blitz at AsylumFantasyFootball.com and BTRFF.com. Stay tuned right here at BTRFF.com for Kellogg's comment. Thanks again. I ran out of breath, Rick.
We're going to have to look for something controversial to talk about next week.
We're just going to fight next week. We'll declare it now. We don't know what about yet, but we're going to fight like dogs.
Ollie Frazier, that ought to be fun.
Something, the Thrilla in Manila. We'll find something better. So thanks again to 88.1 FM WSRU, the voice of the rock. Hit us up on Twitter at Asylum Football. Until next week, we'll see you.
Take care.
Up ACDC, hey. up a little sudden.